Yeah, Film Vault. Welcome to the Film Vault. Thank you for joining us once again. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop. We're your hosts for today's topic, top five character introductions. Character entrance scene. The first time you lay eyes on a character, you get the character's essence. You see him, see her.
Oh, fuck.
See it.
What? Really?
No. I said him and her, so I figured it must come next.
I thought it was like when somebody like says who they are.
Oh, shit. You took it very literally.
Yeah.
Well, this ought to be interesting.
It's going to be terrible.
It's going to be terrible.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. That would be awful. That would be, how stupid you got to be. There are some, don't make that sound.
Sorry.
It's already one. Jesus
track?
Christ.
God damn. I had some beef jerky before I came over here, so it's bad.
There are some lists, namely a YouTube video, which I found out there, which is like 250 character intros. But it's just like,
really?
Dude saying, hi, my name's Mike. What's going on? It's like, how does that help anyone? What is that? Why would you put, there's nothing entertaining there. Why would you do that?
Who went through their DVD collection and compiled that?
Well, I doubt it's a DVD collection.
Okay.
Possibly.
Who
live in the year 2013 here, so I think they're probably looking at streaming clips and whatnot. But I would assume somebody with severe OCD and or meth habit.
Young Anderson Cowan?
What? No, I don't have a meth habit. I have a little OCD, though.
So I said young.
Oh, young Anderson
Cowan. Sorry, young
Anderson. He had a bit of a habit. Hey, so I know you're awfully tired there, young man.
Me?
I can see it in your...
No, I'm powering through. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. You know what is like a hot, strong coffee? The Film Vault.
Speaking of coffee, where's my coffee?
Staring at it.
Now, here's today's episode, Bri. Today's episode. Stop touching my coffee.
It's coffee.
3 days ago, I was kind of a deer in the headlights.
Oh, no.
Thinking, what the hell? What are we going to do here? I better go out and see a couple extra movies because I might do that thing where I come in with like extra flick fashions instead of actually
compensate.
A good list. I couldn't come up with more than like three. And then... went on a bit of a bike ride, nice 10-mile power ride.
Oh, a little mind-clearing bike ride.
Holy shit, dude. They just started flying through my head, but just dumping in my head. I have too many now. It's for the first time in many, many episodes, I have literally too many. Right now, I have six solid ones on my list. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know.
I'll name one of them, and you can take it off your list.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Do you think we'll have crossover?
I'm hoping.
You know, I'm glad you realized the thing that I realized as I was sort of thinking about it. There's a lot of great character introductions out there.
There are. And a lot of
iconic, memorable.
Memorable are the ones that I was having a hard time with, but obviously that is not the case. There's not a great number of lists out there on the internet. So what I think that...
And the list that I did find out, a lot of the same ones.
As we move on... What would be cool, I think, to do on our little website over there, Brian, AndersonBrian.com, is if the listeners, which apparently they leave messages and whatnot, right? If they could compile their own on top of what we come up with, as well as the listener top five, and then, you know, maybe it could be like a source for people to go to maybe even years later. So, you know, for categories such as this one, because there's not really a great source out there at the moment for a compiled list of very great introductions. In fact, the number one that I came up with that may or may not make the list today, the first one I thought of, I didn't see it on any list anywhere. Not even like any also-rans or discussions, I mean message boards. Because when I was panicking, when I was panicking, I was scouring the internet looking. But this is one of those episodes where one of these topics where I wasn't sure what it would yield until I was knee deep, and then I'm like, oh, not bad.
There was a lot of variety in the listener top five this week too, because there were so many different introductions.
Right. And it can be used poorly at times, but we'll get into all that when we get into that. But I'm 70s heavy today.
What you just described, by the way,
70s heavy.
Is sort of what happens at our Facebook page when Logan posts the listener top five. People post their suggestions just in reply to the comment. You can go there right now and look at the, I don't know, 100 or so suggestions that are there.
Speaking of which, I was over there on Monday and it was not updated. There was no discussion at all of today's episode. It was all about whatever we did last week, which is...
What are you talking about?
It's all up there. Anderson is...
I'm not adept at...
For a guy who presses buttons for a living, you are surprisingly technically unadept.
Well, I'm not adept at Facebook because I'm ahead of the curve.
You've evolved past Facebook?
Yeah.
What are you going to do now, bro?
Fleshbot.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Still I haven't heard of.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's where I just go up to people on the street, get in their face.
Press their buttons?
Yeah.
Physically, press them as though they had
buttons. I tune their nipples. I could tune their nipples. Like,
like, what are you doing? You're like, shut up, Fleshbot.
That is pretty sweet.
That'd be awesome.
All right, Fleshbot, reserved TM. All right, let's go. Let's do Flick Fashion.
We're going to Flick Fest.
A lot of movies to be talking about.
Confess
that have been
the seen. Films we've seen in the past week. Anderson?
Yeah.
Got some movies to talk about.
Should I go first? I'm going to go first.
Okay.
I feel like I should go first.
Go first.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to go first.
We may have a crossover on this list.
I doubt it.
I saw a little movie. It's out in theaters right now.
Are you going best to worst? Worst
yeah,
to best?
Yeah, it's a tough one this week again.
Why?
Here's the deal. I saw a couple Norwegian films, Brian, as well as one that was assigned to me. All right, but I'm gonna do an assignment sandwich where I got the one that you assigned to me last week in the middle. So I'm gonna start off with first of two Norwegian films that I've seen since I last saw you. These are the three best films that I've seen since I've seen you. All right.
Why are you on a Norwegian kick?
It's totally coincidental.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So a movie called A Hijacking, directed by Tobias Lindholm.
It's a sweet name.
It's in very limited release right now. It should be coming to a Netflix near you soon enough. This is a movie. And then we also have that Captain Phillips, I believe it's called, with Tom Hanks coming out this fall.
I don't know anything about that.
Oh, my God.
It's almost like a host of a movie show.
So difficult. Yeah, the big fall movie coming out with Tom Hanks, and he's got like a crab fisherman accent, he fishes for lobsters.
The Perfect Storm style.
Yeah, and based on a true story. That's the big American release coming out. Okay. A separate pirating occurred. Somalians star in both the Captain Phillips as well as A Hijacking. King Lippinken, whatever, I can't remember. I can't pronounce the Norwegian title properly. I meant to look that up, but I did not. But
the king.
This movie, A Hijacking, first 40 minutes, I was disappointed. I went in thinking it was going to be one thing. It turned out to be a very different thing. It's very, very understated. Now, understated movies, very cinema verite. I don't like to use that term, but it was very realism. It almost made you felt like you were watching a documentary. Every single shot, handheld. Not to the point where you're getting sick and they're overdoing it, but even shots that look like they're static, like they're locked down, you can see they're actually in someone's hand. And, The storyline takes place partly on the ship that is hijacked by the Somalian pirates and partly in the boardroom, the Norwegian higher ups that own the fleet, that own the ship itself and their business suits doing the negotiations. And so it's split back and forth. And it centers around a cook, a Norwegian cook who's on the ship, and it opens up with him talking to his wife and daughter, talking about how he's going to be coming home a couple days later than expected, and she's all torn up and upset about it. And little does she know that some sweet-ass pirates of the modern age are caught to board.
I doubt she'd find them sweet.
Yeah, I doubt she'd find them sweet. I did. Some of these Norwegians, I mean, some of these Somalians had some real style and pizzazz. I'm hoping that it's even upped in the American version, which is a different pirating altogether. I don't want it to confuse it. It's the same era, same style, same thing going on, but
different
pirates altogether.
This must have been quite a dichotomy between the super Somalis are dark-skinned, and Norwegians are extremely light-skinned.
Oh, yeah. This movie could have been black and white, and it would have been high contrast.
Sure.
Very high contrast. Now, it was very understated. It took me 45 minutes. I mean, I was actually, I don't want to say dozing off, but very, you know, thinking about other things.
Distracted.
Thinking about, like, you know.
Character introductions.
Supermarket list that I have. Literally. Going, should I get the eggs today, but I'm going to be out of town? So I was thinking that kind of thing. But here's what happens with those movies, is if there are good builds and really intense stuff does happen, it's going to resonate with you and it's going to stick with you and it's going to hit you a lot harder than if it was a typical Hollywood style in your face with all the music and the score and the, you know, there's no cats flying out from left of the screen. You know what I mean? There's no style in this movie to the point of fault almost. But when it gets intense, it gets really intense. And it took about 45 minutes for it to win me over. And before I submitted, but I did. And you know what? A week from now, I think I'll know if I like this one even more than I do.
How long did you see it?
A couple days.
Is it subtitled?
Yes. But there's some English. It's Swedish, Norwegian, and English. Danish, Swedish, and English.
Okay.
I'm not very worldly.
Well, Norwegian is a language.
Anyhow, the cook, it's not like you're going to be finding a cook superhero in this by any means. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm getting messages. Very interesting, though. I do recommend this. It gets intense. Right. It gets very intense. And it's based on a real story. And they actually have some of the crew members are actually part of a ship that was pirated. The ship that they use that gets pirated was a ship that has been pirated. The seas that they're shooting in were actually infested with pirates at the time of shooting. So there's all sorts of cool stuff going on there.
You saw this in theaters?
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see. You know, I needed something to hold up to compare and contrast Captain Phillips, which is coming out later this fall.
That's a good point.
Second, Brian, I saw a movie that you assigned to me, which I was not really pleased to be assigned to.
Oh, well, are you pleased now?
20 Feet from Stardom. This is a...
How pleased are you now?
It was good.
Hell yeah, it was.
Now, you're very cryptic when you assigned this to me.
I was?
You didn't flick fest it last week?
No.
But you had obviously seen it.
I'll jump in with you now.
You kind of said, go see that with like a wink and a nod. Now, with that, I was reading into things that maybe I should or should not have been reading into while viewing this.
There's nothing to read into.
A lot of parallels.
I only, as soon as I mentioned it, you for some reason freaked out and didn't want to see it.
Well, because I've been overwrought with the trailer, which is, I don't know if you've seen the trailer for this.
I maybe saw it once, like months ago.
It's beyond uplifting. It's beyond like trying to uplift you into this frenzy of, yes, let her talk! Let the background singers have their movie!
It's not really like that, the movie. Well, go ahead and start. I didn't think the movie was anything like that.
No, it wasn't. And I was pleasantly surprised, despite the fact that I happened to walk in with this group of Yentas that I really did not appreciate their candor. Walking into the theater, the leader of the Yentas, sees that Bruce Springsteen's involved, and she goes, oh my God, am I excited now? You just made my day bringing me a movie with him. He's in my wheelhouse.
Wow.
And I'm like, great, we're dealing with this. They were applauding throughout the movie.
I don't like that.
They applauded big at the end of the movie, and I believe I heard whimpering.
You know what? There was applause at the end of the movie, too, when I saw it. And normally I'm not a fan, but at the end, yeah, I felt it was worthy of applause. It was worthy of, you saw a performance, almost.
The storyline is about the background singers, and there's only a handful of them out there.
Yeah.
You know, we've been seeing
really great ones
and hearing the same background singers for years. I'd say there's probably about a dozen.
Sure.
And a lot of them, many of them are showcased
in this
movie.
Rock and roll, yeah.
And their personalities are big. And interesting, and the movie says a lot about fame and about becoming famous and about passion. And I thought that you were kind of giving me like a go see what I'm dealing with in my life because I'm 20 feet from fame right now.
You thought that was what I was getting at?
I was thinking that when I was watching the movie. I was thinking that like Adam Carolla is your Bruce Springsteen and you're like the black lady background singer.
What's that make
trying
you?
To write a book?
What's that make you?
Oh, I'm in the trenches. I watch it all from afar and write and take notes.
I thought it was spectacular. I loved it. The entire audience that I was in the theater with, the packed, by the way, on a Saturday night, stayed through the entire credits. No one left. I hope you did too, because there was a great song during the credits. I thought it was similar to Standing in the Shadows of Motown, which I don't know if you saw. I thought it was great. So a little bit of Searching for Sugar Man as well, sort of this undiscovered.
It was in your wheelhouse, not to overuse wheelhouse.
No, it was.
I've already done this.
This is the kind
week.
Of movie I like, and I really like.
You
this
like
one.
Movies with music involved, especially
well,
like the
ones.
Kind of music that you would hear in movies over and over again. And that one goddamn Rolling Stones song that I see in like every other Martin Scorsese trailer. Yeah, that was. I think that was the only song you heard all the way through, perhaps.
I don't know, but I will say this. Yes, you do hear that song in too many movies, which is why I was super impressed with how they used it in this one, because it sort of gave me new appreciation, and I heard it in a new way. The isolated vocal track, that was a fucking...
That was pretty
that
cool.
That was a moment.
That
man.
Was kind of cool.
That was a moment.
What I wanted more of, though, and I was really hoping that they would spend more time on it, and there was only like one section in the middle of the movie where there's something like shit talk. Or it was going to be like, these are the people that treated me like shit coming up. These are the people that took advantage of me. And there was only that one Phil Spector portion, which was hilarious, by the way.
Yeah,
this I agree. While she's talking shit about him, they're showing a still of him flipping off the camera because that guy.
Phil had his demons.
Piece of work.
Yeah.
I think so.
Maybe he still does.
Wouldn't it be funny if somebody killed him with a harmonica in prison?
The sweet irony.
Mm.
What do you think is the deadliest musical instrument?
Probably the big bass.
The big, like, upright bass?
Oh, I don't know. The flutes, though. Those are pretty sharp.
Those are sharp, and they, yeah.
Oh, what am I talking about? Hair metal's axe. The
specific axe.
Yeah, the actual.
The flying V, the axe guitar?
The actual axe guitar. That's an axe. Paul Greengrass. By the way, back to the pirate movie, the United States pirate movie, Captain Phillips. Paul Greengrass is directing that one. He was known for Bourne Supremacy and United 93, as well as Bourne Ultimatum and The Green Zone. So It'll be interesting, but I'm afraid that it's going to be all the Hollywood schlock that you'd expect. You know, I'm sure it's instead of being about the cook.
I like his movies.
Instead of being about the cook, though, he does a lot of handheld. But I'm talking about Paul Greengrass right now. A lot of he did Bloody Sunday, right?
I don't remember that.
I believe he did. Bloody Sunday, he did that. It makes you sick almost to the point of, so hopefully he's not too much like that with Captain Phillips. But you know, see, the cool thing about a hijacking is it's about the cook, and the cook's no hero. Cook just wants to see his wife and his daughter, and you feel his fear. You feel bad for him.
Sure.
And Omar is the name of the negotiator, the pirate negotiator, Somali negotiator. Oh, he's creepy.
Back to 20 Feet from Stardom.
No. Back to the hijacking. But you know that the Captain Phillips, his name's right there in the title, Tom Hanks, old Tom Hanks, lobster fisherman, he's going to be a hero. I'm predicting at least one flying kick from the old man.
That'd be awesome.
No, it won't be.
Oh, it won't be awesome at all.
No.
Okay. Can you imagine a scenario in which 20 Feet from Stardom isn't nominated for an Oscar?
No. This will be up for an Oscar. I hope it doesn't win. I'm hoping Blackfish. Oh, God.
Have you seen Blackfish?
No, I will.
That's the Orca movie, right?
By the time that this airs, there should be a review of it up on my site, and I will be talking about it this week. Yeah, it's the Orca, the Shamu movie.
It looks interesting.
I've seen trailers now 3 times on the big screen. Chills every time.
It looks interesting.
Looks so good. And I've been reading all like the rebuttals and the arguments on both sides. There's arguments to be made on both sides.
Sure, of course, as with any good documentary.
No, I don't think the documentary is going to be hitting on the other side too much. I'm just reading message boards, people saying, do you understand Shamu helps people understand these magnificent creatures and not want to kill them? I'm reading a lot of those. You know what I mean?
All right. Sure.
Finally, to round out my flick fashion.
Another Norwegian film.
Another Norwegian film, and this one is everything a hijacking wasn't. It's called Headhunters, and I've been hearing some hype on this for a while, and when I say I've been hearing about it, I mean you, the good listeners, have been sending me emails and tweets saying you should watch Headhunters. It's a very good movie. I think you'd appreciate it. Lots of twists and turns. It's very slick. Good use of music. However, there is a cat that's thrown into a scene, which I literally throwing into a scene.
Like physically thrown?
Yeah, because it's like this is a thriller, all right? And there's a lot of like holy shit, what's going to happen next? And it's the oldest trick in the book. It's such a cliche, but a fucking black cat gets thrown onto the protagonist. Mm. And it's like, come on.
I appreciate it.
Watching it with the wife, I looked over. I'm like, really?
She's maybe
like,
that's an homage to older films.
I don't think so. Oh, you know, back to a hijacking room.
Describe the third film.
The first film I talked about, a hijacking. No, actually, I didn't really do an order here. Okay. A hijacking's really good. I'm ending with Headhunters because it's available on Insta. You can watch it right now.
Okay.
Watch the if I like a movie, I'll stay through the whole credits. That's what I do. That's my thing. And I was watching with a purpose today because I was hoping to see the little Humane Society stamp of approval at the end. I did not.
Oh.
Fairly.
Well, Humane Society is an American.
No, they did. They go around, but you might be right. But there was no animals were not hurt at the end. There was no text letting me know that. I'm fairly certain that I watched a goat be killed.
Oh,
yeah, his little tail was wagging, and you could see all of his inner throat.
Ew.
Yeah, it was bad.
That's like sacred though for like Jewish people, right?
It was because they were hungry.
Oh, that was a very ignorant
thing
to
say. They're out at sea for quite some time.
Oh, okay.
Headhunters.
Think of the bloodletting.
Available on Instant right now, and it looks like they're going to be making an American version of this as well, remake. It looks like it's slated for 2014. But it's about a headhunter, an actual very well-put-together man who goes out and finds CEOs for companies.
Oh, I'm thinking of like a pirate-type headhunter.
Headhunter.
Yeah, I know what Headhunter is.
Open. Okay.
They're the executive recruiter, Anderson.
Opens
executive
up
recruiter.
With our main headhunter man, suit and tie. You find this all out in the open. He also doubles as a high-priced art thief. And it's very meticulous and thought out and well-crafted how he steals these. It reminds me a little bit of Thomas Crown Affair. But this would definitely be a candidate for top 5 character unravelings, which I've been pushing for a while.
Mm.
Where you start with a guy who's all buttoned up. And
together.
Very well, got a great live, everything's together, and by the end, holy shit, I don't recognize
things have
that
gone
guy.
Out of control.
Headhunters, a lot of twists, a lot of turns, some plot
that's
holes,
good,
I think.
That's a good topic, by the way.
Maybe I didn't get it, but there were some things like, why in the fuck would he want to kill that guy that I had going on with my thought process, but not going to get too deep into that. I like people to make up their own minds, and it's a very fun movie, and there's a lot of detail in there, and there's a lot of gore, actually, too. Mm. Not like horror gore, but like there's some car accidents, like the guy's no longer got a face. Interesting.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hammers to the fingers. Yeah.
Right.
Not torture, but definitely interesting.
Sloppy nailing.
A good little Norwegian movie. Very, very different from a hijacking. Two very, very different made films from the same country.
Hmm.
Headhunters, hijacking, 20 Feet from Stardom.
I also saw 20 Feet from Stardom, which we talked about. Very, very good movie. Probably the best movie I saw this week. I saw one that was pretty good and one that kind of sucked balls. The one that sucked balls was The Lone Ranger.
Why would you see this movie?
I'm seeing these movies for a Kroll show.
What are you doing?
I'm seeing them for the...
Why don't you...
What?
Don't want to chastise, but that's what I'm going to do right here.
Okay.
Why don't you see that as an opportunity to let people know about good movies they should go see instead of like seeing it as an opportunity to go see shit, which you know is shit, unless you're dumb. And then just talking shit about that movie.
You know what? Actually, usually when I do review a bad movie, I say, you know, it's a better movie. Go see this one. Such as you'll see with my... Oh, no. Wait. When did I do that?
You okay, buddy? You want some coffee?
Yes, with the next one. Gore Verbinski directed The Lone Ranger, of course, director of Pirates of the Caribbean movies, Rango,
Weatherman.
And The Ring, and The Weatherman, yeah. Which I did not say. I did not see Weatherman. The Weatherman. I did not see that.
The Weatherman's a very good movie.
It's a good
movie. Very underrated. Very forgotten. I liked it very much.
This is Johnny Depp, Armie Hammer, blah, 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 blah. William Fichtner's in this, and Barry Pepper's in this.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're probably not going to see this.
Well, it's made for like 8-year-old girls.
It is made for, well, that's very funny you mentioned that. I had multiple people tweet me and say this exact thing. My 8-year-old really wants to see this. Is it appropriate? And apparently a lot of 8-year-olds want to see this movie, and a lot of parents are thinking I'm a good guy to ask. Here's the thing. Well, if your 8-year-old is...
No one knows their 8-year-old girls like Brian.
They didn't say girls. I was hoping.
You know they should ask. It's Corona.
That's right. He could probably ask them personally off the mic. If an eight-year-old is begging you to see this movie, you
tweet Corona, "Hey, is my 8-year-old daughter? you think she should watch this?" And his response is, "Hold on, let me check, let me ask."
Good guy. If an 8-year-old's all about seeing this and is bugging you to see it, it's probably fine for him or her. If you have to drag your 8-year-old, I wouldn't do it. It's a sort of self-selecting sample kind of thing. Now back to the movie, Anderson. You're probably not going to see this in the theater. Or at all.
No.
I do recommend you rent it because the movie opens, I'm not exaggerating, with one of the best action sequences I've ever seen.
That says nothing.
In a movie. It's
coming from
so spectacularly
done. I think twirling metal is exciting.
Twirling metal is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of twirling metal. No, there's not much twirling metal. It's a great action sequence. It's probably a 10 or 15 minute sort of chase type thing involving a train. It ends, Anderson, with one of the greatest action sequences I've ever seen. I would say two of the top 30 or 40 action sequences ever that I've seen are in this movie. They're spectacular. In between,
are you subjected to a bunch of CGI, questionable CGI though?
You know what? You are, but not more than any other movie these days. But there is a lot of actual stunt work. There's men jumping through things and landing on things.
Okay, all right.
In between, by the way, let me finish.
All right.
By the way, Gore Verbinski.
Yeah, he's. I like Gore,
and I think he's a really, really talented action director.
Got range.
That first Pirates movie was really, really well done, and people forget about that because the last couple, two and a half, weren't very good.
Right.
The last one was terrible. The one before that wasn't
very good.
Very,
very good.
First one was
good. Could almost come up on today's list. Safe. Good.
That said, between these two spectacular scenes is 2 solid hours of very boring movie. This is a 2-hour-and-40-minute movie. It's way too long. There's a boring, boring...
So 8-year-olds aren't going to like this, right?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a solid rental, though, because you can skip right to the very end.
Who's going
to
do that?
Not
this guy. All right, why don't we move on? Because I feel like I'd rather not be a part of a show that spends a lot of time talking about Lone Ranger a week and a half after it's come out.
Why would I see that?
I don't know.
Thank you, Logie.
Because you go to Disneyland all the time. No fucking why would you see that to me?
That's an experience.
Logan, that's for children.
Disneyland's not for children. Oh. They serve alcohol there.
Get that drop. Finally, a better movie, which I think Logan did see and is all over us to talk about. Pacific Rim.
Wow.
Feels like you have that chambered. Pacific Rim, in theaters now, directed by Guillermo del Toro, or Willy del Toro, as he's known stateside. Director of Pan's Labyrinth, which I only just recently saw. Anderson, you did not see Pacific Rim, did you?
I saw it.
You saw it?
Yeah.
Okay. This movie stars a lot of actors who I wouldn't consider household names. I only recognize 5 of the stars, Idris Elba, Charlie Day. You probably might not recognize these names.
Hey, we can just cut this discussion short and go right to the top 5 intros. I can refer everyone over to AndersonCowan.com.
You think? Oh, they said this is going to be your top 5 intros.
No.
I was going to say, under what circumstances will that happen? Okay,
it's a reintroduction to bad Hollywood summer blockbusters. I hate to be that guy, and people are loving this movie. But holy shit!
Let me finish my point about the cast. It's a lot of TV actors.
Yeah,
and I really do feel that for big movies, for summer blockbusters, for big action movies, whatever, you need big movie stars. You need movie stars, or at least one. None of these guys are movie stars, and the movie, I think, suffers because of it.
Kind of in the same way that District 9, I think, suffered.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
However, that wasn't the problem with the movie for me.
I don't think you can make World War Z.
You know, you bring up a
Brad
good point,
Pitt.
Though. But like the opening, okay, the opening.
You need someone big.
I realized that it wasn't, it didn't stand a chance to live up to half my hype with the opening scene. Well, the first 5 minutes of the movie, we're not going to be giving away spoilers here. I promise.
Because
there's still a lot of people who probably haven't seen this thing. And you know what? Most, I would say that the majority of our audience is going to like this movie because it seems like everyone loves it.
Let me just say, I actually think I did like it. If I was to say like, didn't like, I would say like.
The Dark Knight has ruined blockbusters for me for at least a little while because okay. it just the bar is so goddamn high. Mm. And I really believe that with the Guillermo's involvement with this movie, it was going to set new standards and it was going to be a different kind of movie. And I realized just how the first five. Okay, back to the first 5 minutes. It pretty much everything you've seen in the trailers is covered in the first 5 minutes. Like, they catch you up on the first movie.
I think I like the first 5 minutes the best of the whole movie.
Actually, what I said in my little review there, which I don't think is the best thing I've ever written. Whenever I tear apart a movie or really bitch about a movie, I always feel like I should write it really good because I feel bad writing poorly, bad about movies, right. And especially if it's not written well.
I feel like you shouldn't reference your written review on an audio review podcast.
Why is that, Logan?
Because this is your forum. This was your primary forum.
Wow. I began as a writer, though.
I do like that, actually.
Okay, well.
I don't care. Talk about your reviews. I don't care.
I don't have to talk about the review. But the first 5 minutes is almost catching you up on, like, here's what you missed in the first movie. It felt like they were referring to a movie that already took place, right?
Yeah, the almost prequel to this.
Could have been rife with, like, satire and a lot of parallels and things that we see today. But instead, it just glosses over that in 5 minutes with montages and a bunch of postcard-esque scenes being ripped apart by these huge creatures. There's no build-up to the creatures. Mm. And then we just go into, okay, now let's make it about the guys that actually do the fighting, which are the boringest part of the entire fucking story, by far. And you're right. They're not stars, so I really don't care. When those two brothers are in the... This is the very beginning of the movie again, guys, so don't worry. I'm not giving anything away. When they start with their banal banter back and forth about... And then just ignore Stringer Bell, their captain, and just go and do their own thing in this multi-billion-dollar machine. I'm just like, this is... Oh, right, that's the movie it is? That's what movie this is? Great. Two hours.
The actors were handcuffed by the fact that the characters were so stupid.
It's so bad. It was like Avatar bad.
Bad. I know the characters in Avatar were bad.
And the creatures weren't that great. They were so CGI'd. I never once felt their massiveness. I never once felt like whole. And I purposely went down to what I consider the greatest theater in the world, which is the Village in the middle of UCLA's campus, Westwood. It's the huge Fox Village Theater. I love that theater.
Just swing by.
And I sat in my favorite seat because it was empty, shockingly, the day it opened. I couldn't believe it. I could have seen this thing at press screening, but I'm like, I don't want to see it in this shitty little theater. I'm going to go see this thing proper. And now I understand that I let myself be a little boy, like at a candy store, going, this is going to be great. Oh, boy, oh, boy. And it did not even live up to half the hype. And now I know you love it, Logan. And I'm not, and I hate to be that guy. And believe me, I love to love something that everyone else loves. It's a novelty for me. And I thought this would be it.
It's a rare treat.
Let me say that I agree the acting's not very good, the plot sucks, but I go into movies, when I judge a movie, I judge it based on how entertained I was, and I was super entertained throughout the whole movie. There was not a dull moment for me.
I thought I would be.
I mean, that's fair. I didn't feel the same way, but...
I thought the story was
there were several dull moments. Yeah, the story was... I think I have the exact same. The story was stupid.
There were a lot of plot holes in it, and if you know, knowing what we know about science and the history of our planet, it makes no sense.
Right, none!
But
I
loved it. I thought it was super fun. I haven't been that entertained in a movie in a long time.
I thought that I'd have the same response, Logan, and that's, you know, I set myself up for failure, and that's kind of what I, in my little review there, which I'm referring to, sorry, Logan, sorry, but I said if you read this and you haven't seen it yet, I didn't give anything away, and hopefully it will set you up to be pleasantly surprised if you believe anything that I'm saying. Hmm. I also said this, and this kind of sums up my entire take on it. There's probably a porn coming out called Pacific Rim Job.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding when I say that I bet I would be more entertained by that than this movie. It's perfect. It's upsetting.
I'm in between you guys. I think I would give this about a solid B. I think it delivered on what it promised, which was it delivered on what the bare minimum should have been for this movie. I wish it had been so much more.
I wish, you know, we could just build some of the creatures. You know what I mean? Just to give it some reference. We can actually have an actual foot and an actual actor standing next to that foot, even if it's just for a brief shot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that the only thing that they did build, I think I read, were the robot feet. That was the only thing that they could actually build and get into a sound stage.
I thought they did a good job of revealing how giant the robots were, though, because the first time you kind of see them getting into it, you realize how big of a control room they're in, but then you realize they're just in the head, and I thought that was a really cool reveal of the scale of it.
Of how big they are. Yeah.
I think I was bumped by the fact that it's supposed to have the backstory is supposed to have started like this year. And the fact that this technology is available, like, in order to control the robots, two pilots have to have their minds melded so they can control it, like, with the same mind.
Well,
it was just
they've
like,
had that technology for
a while.
No, it
was like 6 years later.
It's from Nazis.
No, Logan, it takes place six years later. They start...
No. There was 5 years of them, like, just attacking monsters with tanks and planes and stuff like that, and they didn't...
That would have been a great...
They didn't develop the robots
until
5 years later.
If halfway through the movie, they developed the robots because it was a must, and like, we could see how, like, you know, the bureaucracy behind it and how they actually had to do it, and they maybe hired the Chinese because they're good at making things happen quick.
Yep.
If there was all that shit, and then the robot pilots became these big stars and became assholes and were out, like, drinking and ended up on, like, rehab shows, that would have been cool.
Arguing science in a world where tsunamis don't exist, though, so this is kind of pointless to argue the science of the movie because it makes no sense.
Let's
move on.
Let's move on.
Come up next.
Oh, I'm disappointed. And I hate guys.
I did them out of order.
I hate to be that dick who because everyone
don't.
I talk to loves.
Love being that dick.
But speaking of nerds, take this, nerds. Day after tomorrow, I'm going to hang out on the set of Captain America.
That's right.
The second half of Captain America?
Yeah, I'm going to go hang out on the set probably for 3 or 4 hours, watch some stunts, watch some green screen shit, schmooze with some people. Oh, I'm going to be uncomfortable.
Chris Evans?
I'm going to be so uncomfortable. These people only knew how much I don't care about any of this shit. Oh, but my buddy's working on it, and he told me to come by. I'm like, all right.
Oh, hurrah.
Yeah, so I'm up. No, that's not Asian. I will have some stories, hopefully, though, for next week about little Captain America.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Come on next. Top 5 character. Intros. Dancing, I'd kneel and hold out my guitar. They'll hit the string with open hands. Ain't been a shot. You really can't get anything on Amazon, Anderson.
Brains?
You may be able to get brains. Someone got some beef jerky seasoning. So obviously they're making jerky. I didn't realize you can get the seasoning for beef jerky.
Why is that shocking to you?
It's just not shocking. It's not shocking, but it's random.
It is random.
It is extremely random. Mm-hmm. And by the way, fans of jerky over here, so feel free to share.
I don't like that plug. That seems like we're begging. I don't like it.
No, we're requesting. Okay. Time for the interesting and notable purchases and random purchases on Amazon. I should start saying that. Interesting, notable, and random this week on Amazon.com. Click through on AndersonandBrian.com. Someone got a GoPro camera. Good luck with that. Please don't hurt yourself. Someone got an Ultrabook. Thank you for clicking through for that. That was not a cheap item, so we appreciate that. Two 36 packs of Trojan Magnum condoms.
72 bangs.
Yeah. Got a couple of grilling accessories. Someone got a basting brush, and someone got a wok topper. Better apparently put your wok on your grill. Let's see. Someone got a soprano saxophone, Anderson. Someone got the music, the original soundtrack to World War Z. Someone got some origami paper. They're going to make some origami figures. Someone got a dresser. Somebody got a red wine stain remover, which I always am curious if that works. They always see that. Someone see them selling that at wine shops and such. Curious if it works. Figurines, one R2-D2 and one C-3PO. Of course, you got to get both. Cards Against Humanity, a fun game. Someone got that.
Somebody bought that for us.
For you and the wife?
It's a great game.
Never mind. They bought it for the after this or
something. No. It's a fun game. Someone got the, I don't know why this is under Toys and Games, but the Indiana Jones commemorative DVD collection. And somebody got, it's almost football season. Somebody got, PS3 and NCAA Football 11. So enjoy playing that and NCAA Football 14. Wow. Awesome. Enjoy, Anderson. Movie time. What are people buying?
Speaking of movies, Brian, I don't know if I mentioned this last segment when we were talking about Guillermo del Toro on Pacific Rim, but he's slated to direct Troll Hunter.
You did not mention that.
I just did.
Okay. We haven't talked about Troll Hunter on the show in a long time, so listeners, go check out Troll Hunter.
I don't know if it's still streaming, but fun movie.
We're on Trolls.
And Guillermo del Toro is going to do all he can to ruin that now. Fantastic. Jeez. And here we go with the movies that were bought most recently. Start off with a little Horrible Bosses. Yeah, you know what? I bet it's fun on DVD or cable. What else? People buy Aladdin, 2-disc Platinum Edition, Alien Anthology.
Speaking of Alien.
Safe.
Beauty and the Beast, Platinum Edition. Somebody bought Dirty Pretty Things. You know what? I believed the hype and I went and saw it in the theaters and I was sorely disappointed, but hopefully you like it more
At home. Sorry if you bought that and you're hearing this. Pan's Labby was bought. Pan's Labyrinth, Guillermo del Toro's, dare I say, only great movie.
Hey, you can make that, I guess you can make that argument.
Spring Breaker.
Yeah, it's out now.
By the way, I'm following Riff Raff, who he was based on.
The real Riff Raff?
On Vine. That fucker Vine's way too much. I got to stop following that guy. One out of every ten is funny. One out of every ten. Riff Raff.
Monopolizes your online time.
This Boy's Life Was Bought, as well as X-Men First Class. All right. Those are the only new, the notable ones that we're going to be naming here.
It was early a short week. I had to record a day early, so one day less of movies. Regardless, we appreciate you buying everything that you get normally on Amazon and clicking through. We appreciate the effort, and to show how much we appreciate.
Back to the show.
I wasn't going to say that. I was going to say back to the show, normally like a human being. I don't know why you did that over-the-top rendition,
okay. But
back to the show. Hi, I'm Mary-Kate Olsen, and I'm Ashley Olsen, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBrian.com. Join me under the blanket and touch my feet. Yeah. Welcome back. Thank you, everyone, for listening and downloading. Appreciate it. Thank you also to Annie Corbett. Annie's our feature artist of the week. Reminds me, Anderson, a little bit of one of my favorite artists. She's got a little Sarah Bareilles center. I don't know if she'd appreciate that. I hope so. Sarah Bell's great. But Annie Corbett is our feature artist of the week from Portland, Oregon. Album, Leaving Gardens. AndyCorbett.bandcamp.com. Check it out. AndersonandBrian.com, too.
Hey, what was with all the blue fluorescent stuff? Phosphorescent stuff on those on the creatures.
That was their blood.
Cod juice.
It was their blood.
Really? It just reminded me of Attack the Block. It seemed very similar. And seemed like it was maybe covering up some questionable CGI.
There was a lot of stuff pulled from other movies. There's a lot of Top Gun. There was a lot of Starship Troopers.
Yeah, but there's no satire.
No, there was none. There was
none.
No, there was. I was actually hoping for some of that, for a little bit of commentary or satire or some sort of
something. It was just like, we're going to make the biggest
or parody almost. Like I
summer movie you've ever seen. There was like three places where
mission
I
accomplished.
It was.
Oh, the Newton's cradle scene.
I guess.
Newton's cradle scene was hilarious.
That was funny.
That was very funny.
That was funny.
That was good.
I enjoyed that.
Made me buy a Newton's cradle.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's funny. What did you do with it?
It's coming.
Oh, it's on.
I clicked through.
You clicked through our site. We're going to get a penny and a half.
We'll probably get 4 cents if I had to guess. Okay.
Top five character introductions. Anderson, entrance scenes for actors.
Yeah.
For character actors.
Yes. Now, this actually can be distractingly bad if done poorly. And, you know, I'm not to reference anything specifically, but De Niro and his later choices kind of comes to mind. I think a lot of the time when these directors work with somebody of his caliber and his stature and with his reputation, they get so excited that they actually write an intro in for his character, even if his character. I believe that he had I could be wrong, but like Meet the Fockers, I'm pretty sure there's some kind of intro where like the movie slows down for this character
who you don't even
know yet, but you know the actor, and then it makes you look at the actor rather than the character, and then it's not about the character or the movie anymore. So it can be distractingly bad.
Interesting.
The ones example that I'm going to cite, which kind of shows both sides to it, I think works well. And there's actually two of them in the same movie, and it's the same actor. And that's this summer's This Is the End. Danny McBride had two massive intros, and they're both really well done.
Can you have two?
And they're both very funny. But any other kind of movie,
no way,
it wouldn't have worked. And it almost didn't work in this one too. It was almost too much because it was such like Danny McBride salivation, you know
one
what I mean?
One was a reveal, but one was a character introduction.
The first one was him blowing smoke rings in the bathtub at the end of the next morning, because we don't see him in the first part, right? But he was at the party, but we didn't know because he passed out in the bathtub. And then the next part was with his reinvention.
That's it?
Yes, well, I'm not going to say it, but
it was a reveal.
Those are two examples of character introductions.
Yeah, okay.
And it was a reveal as well, but it was also a reintroduction
because he's morphed.
But when it's done right, and a lot of time it lets you know what kind of movie you're in store for. And I don't know if you're starting or I'm starting, but
I will say that mine, let's see, all but two of mine, so really only just three, are sort of the beginning of the movie, sort of setting the tone, but a couple of mine happen effectively at a certain distance into the movie.
And this is another one of those topics and weeks where I'm excited to hear what yours are.
Yeah, very much so.
Which
yours or the listeners?
Yours and the listeners.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear everyone's.
I doubt we'll have any crossover, honestly, just only because there are so many good ones out
there. Here we go. I'm going to start it off just to put you out of your misery.
Oh, I have a clip, too, Logan. Get that.
I have one clip as well. Couldn't let you have the one clip. Number five for me, a movie I haven't talked about in quite some time, but a movie definitely worthy of bringing up again. Not on Fuckflix, unfortunately. It's a French film, Brian, so you're not interested in this. 1992, a little movie called Man Bites Dog was released.
Nope.
Man Bites Dog. Black and white. Probably nowadays has lost some of its bite, pardon the pun, because we've seen so much since 1992.
It's good stuff.
But I remember when I first saw it, it's a mockumentary, which I'm not a big fan of those mockumentaries, but this is a mockumentary about a serial killer. And it's done in a raw, visceral fashion that could be definitely very off-putting to many people. And that's one of the reasons why Anderson in 1992 found this movie so appealing. Directed by three separate people, all French descent, names I will not mention.
Are there three separate parts to the movie or just three directors?
Three directors. A bit of a, and I looked up all of them. I believe I got to the end of all of them and couldn't find anything else recognizable worthy of mentioning. So anyways, point of the story is it opens up. It's very funny and inventive in the sense that it's a camera crew following around a serial killer. And it opens up. You first see the serial killer in the very opening of the movie. It's available on YouTube. The entire movie's up there on YouTube. If you want to, like, if you have an Apple TV or something, you can watch it. At least watch the intro.
Yeah.
If you can stomach it. And he strangles a woman. And the acting is somewhat, he's on a train and he comes up behind this woman. It's like happens in a flash in the very beginning of the movie. And he strangles this woman with some kind of cord. And he takes her into, like, they're in a common area. And then he pulls her back into, like, a little private car. And he strangles her. And I would have wanted her to act like she was dying a little bit more. Okay. But you go, oh, that's the main character, and he's killing this, what seems to be an innocent woman. Cut to him with her body at the side of a river, and he's breaking the fourth wall and explaining to the audience, to the filmmakers, this mockumentary, what he does with the bodies after he kills them. And he's explaining that you have to, I have an actual quote here. He says, his name's Ben, he strangles this woman on the train, and then he gives us a lesson on how to sink the body. I've just finished ballasting the corpse, you see. And then he talks about how bodies have air and like and their bones and like stuff makes them float.
Sure.
So you got to put
buoyancy.
Rocks and whatnot. And he says that children and midgets are the hardest to make it buoyant. He has like these mathematical ratios of stones per body weight that you got to put in the bag to make them sink. And that was Ben, and that was the intro to Ben, Man Bites Dog. And it's funny in the sense that like later on the camera crew, while following Ben, their serial killer, the protagonist of the movie, they run into another serial killer who has his own camera
being
crew.
Being followed by a camera crew?
Yeah, that's it's fun. Good. If you remember me talking about this years ago with you.
I think I do actually now. That's not something you hear about every day.
It's an interesting film in that sense. Very black and white, very independent, but worth a check out if you're into that kind of thing. Mm. Worth a check. Worth a watch. Yeah.
My films, by the way, span the decades. To wit, number five from 1962. Logan, this is the one that the clip from, so don't play it quite yet, but I'll cue you. Directed by Terrence Young, Dr. No, Anderson, the first James Bond movie.
We get to do a top five, Dr. No. I mean, 007s. Please don't do that.
No, Dr. No. It's been repeated and parodied so many times. Everyone knows Bond, James Bond. One study even called it the most recognizable movie line of all time. If you say to someone in many countries, you know, Bond, they'll reply, you know, James Bond. It's a very well-known thing. But when you see it here for the first time, number one, it's totally organic. The scene, it opens in a casino, a woman playing Baccarat. What are you doing? You okay?
Yeah.
Freaking out. A woman's playing Baccarat. She keeps losing to a man, Anderson. We only see from the back, or we only see his hands and the cards. Eventually, she cashes in for another $1,000. This is what we hear.
I need another $1,000.
I admire your courage, Miss...
Trench. Sylvia Trench. I admire your luck, Mr...
Bond. James Bond.
Mr. Bond, I suppose you wouldn't care to raise the limit?
I have no objections.
You can close it there.
Timothy Dalton?
No, that's Sean Connery, of course, is James Bond, introducing himself for the very first time to audiences everywhere. And it's amazing if you think about it, Anderson, the iconicness of this scene, but the fact that the music is still the same. Like, the music hasn't changed. Like, that's sort of a timeless
branding,
score.
Branding.
It's amazing.
Gotta brand it.
And then everyone, you know, the Bond, James Bond thing has been wedged, wedged into many, many James Bond movies.
Isn't it in every single one?
There's a couple where it's, actually.
I'm pretty sure it's...
It was at the very end of Casino Royale.
I'm pretty sure you Bondies... what do you guys call yourselves? Those people that like Bond so much. Bondies? Please don't say Bondies.
We call ourselves fucking awesome dudes.
Mm-hmm. Don't do the sniff. Bondies. Now, if you guys went to see a movie, and a Bond movie, and it didn't have that A, music, B, some bitch that's supposed to be hot, and
first of all, the bitch is always hot.
C, the Bond, James Bond fucking thing, you guys would be furious.
But that's the thing. The James Bond fucking thing has been wedged into all the movies. Here is totally organic, and it works. He's suave. He's in the season. You don't see this in the clip, obviously, but he's in the tuxedo, and he's smoking. He opens up his little thing of rolled cigarettes, and he's beating this high society woman at Baccarat, and he's taking all her money, and it's
Timothy Dalton, right?
No, this is actually Sean Connery, the man who made the role iconic.
Wait, the guy that's the dragon voice?
The only thing,
Dragonheart?
That's the one. The only thing I didn't like about this scene, it's a minor thing. Why the fuck is James Bond playing Baccarat? It's a very...
cultured game.
No, right? It's not.
Cultured.
It sounds cultured, but it's just a game of luck. It's a game of chance. It's like if he was playing roulette, which is not a very sophisticated game. However, it's in a French casino.
Oh, this
so
is the one where... And then he yells, always bet on black?
No... I'll explain it off the air, but the point is, my number five is James Bond from Dr. No, the first time you ever hear
it was
Bond.
Timothy
Bond.
Dalton yells, always bet on black, and it was in Dr. Goldfinger. Why do you make the noise?
You're partially right.
Mm-hmm. Always bet on black.
Don't write that down. You fucking,
what am I doing?
You beat it out of me.
What? The noise?
Yeah, that's right.
Number four for me. Here we go. Logan, how many James Bond movies have you seen?
Like five.
Good man. Number four.
Any old ones? All recent ones?
GoldenEye. Oh, you mean like old as in the Sean Connery?
Yeah.
No.
If we have any crossover, Brad, this is where it's going to happen.
Okay.
All right? All right. Now, this movie's been brought up so many times. It's so iconic. I brought in some fun little factoids to go along with it, all right? Walter Hill was supposed to originally direct this movie in 1979, which was originally supposed to be called Star Beast. Imagine Alien being called Star Beast. You see that Star Beast? No one can hear you scream in space, or in space that can't hear you scream. Right. Star Beast came out. But, of course, the intro I'm referring to is the xenomorph that came out of John Hurt's chest. And
the chest buster
scene. That's the first time you ever see one of these so-called xenomorphs or Star Beasts, as I like to refer
so
to
this
them.
This is your intro? It's the alien?
It's the alien. It's the first time you ever see him, which is now
a character in the movie.
It's an iconic character that everyone knows, and H.R. Giger gets the credit. I love how H.R. Giger, who it makes some really creepy art. If you're not, it might be Geiger.
Geiger.
It goes back and forth. I've had many drunken discussions with people, and I can never remember what we landed on in the morning.
I never heard the name Giger.
I've heard of both, Geiger and
you
Giger.
You have Giger?
Giger. But look up some of his just raw art, and every single one of them is so sexual and dead. It's so creepy. But, of course, they had to redo a lot of his renderings because they were so overtly sexual. They're like, hey, dude, we're not making an alien porn here. We're trying to make just a xenomorph. But here's for that scene, the so famous chest-busting scene. There was a rumor going around that John Hurt was the only one who knew it was actually going to happen on set, and that was partially true. They knew there was going to be something that happened, but you know the girl that gets the blood all over her face?
Yeah.
She had no idea.
It was a very genuine reaction.
No idea she could be sprayed
with
blood. You know the original budget for Alien was $4.2 million?
I'm so glad you're talking about this and not
$4.2 million, Brian.
I'm so glad you're talking about this
and you know that they doubled it? Because they were so into Ridley Scott's...
you know what I thought of?
I'm talking.
Yeah,
Ridley
right.
Scott's storyboards were so impressive, the studio doubled it to $8.4 million. You know, they don't make movies for... there's like a window that the studios don't touch anymore. It's like in between 2 and 14 million, I think it is. Might be 2 and 20. They just don't... If your movie's going to cost about that much, they don't even touch it.
Interesting.
Because mathematically, it doesn't make sense for them.
Interesting.
It's ridiculous, because that's where all the best movies are made.
I was going to say.
That's the range. But if your movie's less than $2 million, don't think about greenlighting it. If it's more than 20, let's talk.
Speaking of Ridley Scott and earlier Pacific Rim, I was thinking about how the whole knock against Blade Runner was, it looks amazing. It's a technical masterpiece. But the story and the characters, it doesn't work, or slow, or it's whatever, the character... The fucking characters and story and plot of Blade Runner is 10 times what it is in, maybe 100 times what it is in Pacific Rim.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the knock on Pacific Rim, is that it looks great, technical masterpiece. Which, by the way, I didn't mention, it is a technical masterpiece. It's a CGI work of art, in my opinion.
Not anymore. I think Jurassic Park's got it beat. Jurassic Park, like, I felt those dinosaurs' footsteps. I was terrified of their girth.
But that was a lot of animatronics, too.
See? My point. Exactly.
Jurassic Park, a better movie by no
CGI. A lot of the art of CGI, Logan, is the art of not noticing it or using.
I agree
it
with
subtly,
that, but you can't compare it
or intertwining it.
You can't compare the CGI, accomplishments between the two movies.
I will. I wanted to see one of those things sneeze all over a little kid.
Anyway, sorry.
An actual head.
Number four, Alien. Keep talking about Alien.
Gelatinous fucks.
This is my number one of my movies that hold up. If anyone listening to this podcast has not heard or has not seen Alien,
Your number one.
This was my number one movie that hold up.
Oh.
We did many, whatever, year.
Did you have this one on your list for...
No.
Oh, yeah, because you were...
You retired it for me. I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Did you retire Alien or Aliens? Oh, you retired Aliens, thinking I'd talk about that more.
That's the first time anyone got to see... I remember my mom and dad coming home, having seen this, and talking about how crazy it is. No, on their way out the door, because I was too young to stay up, and they were going to see it, and my mom was, like, scared, and she's like, apparently people have been having heart attacks during a certain scene, and, like, ambulances have to come and resuscitate people in aisles, and that's a rumor. I don't know if it's been dispelled yet, but this is the scene that everyone... And you watch it now... All right, if you're a youngster listening to this and you've never seen that scene or that movie or that scene.
Logan, have you seen Alien?
Yeah, of course I have. Yeah, Logan, several times.
He can't produce this if he hasn't seen Alien.
That's a good point.
Good answer, Logan, because if it was no, I think I'd stop talking. But if you watch it, I watched it just a couple days ago, doesn't hold up. That scene in particular,
what? It
is so corny. Especially if
that scene,
especially if you've seen Spaceballs. No, I'm talking about the scene itself holds up with the reactions and all that, but the actual little xenomorph is so bad.
You can tell somebody's underneath the table just going, with the little stick.
It's almost Grover bad.
Grover?
Yeah, like
Sesame, the Muppets?
Sesame Street. Yeah, you can almost feel the stick, like Logan said.
Interesting.
Like his movements.
I never got that impression.
Yeah, watch it again.
All right.
It's pretty comical.
I will. Done.
And then he runs across, and I remember seeing that when I was a kid, and it just freaked me the fuck out. Mm. And now, considering where we've come, yeah.
All right. Number four for me. By the way, Anderson, my number one is a non-human character. Oh, much like your number four.
Look at that.
So we'll see if... no crossover. Guessing it was for sure.
My one, the very first one that I thought of for this list, Brian, just got bumped.
Hmm.
Doesn't make my top five anymore.
Damn. Unless I have it in my top four.
You're not going to, because I didn't see it on any lists or anything. It's the one that stands out for me.
Well,
I'll talk about it.
At least two of mine, I did not see any lists either, including my number four. Number four for me. The introduction, the opening, let's say 7 minutes, the introduction to all the characters in Magnolia is so goddamn well done. From 1999, Paul Thomas Anderson, writer and director of Magnolia. It is a perfect scene. It's not even a scene, it's a series of vignettes. The kinetic energy connecting all of these characters and all of these scenes is, and the way they're portrayed, and then you get... 30 seconds each, 30, 45 seconds each at a time with these characters, and yet you, through these actions and what they do and what they say, you know exactly who these characters are, you know exactly what they're going to, not what they're going to do, but what the actions they're going to take are justified in those first 45 seconds. Are you looking at it right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. When was the last time you saw this?
I only saw it once, and remember, I got some history with it. This is like a girlfriend that I didn't like.
Am I going to sign this to you sometime?
You might want to do that, because I now can honestly say that Paul Thomas Anderson, not only is my favorite like living filmmaker, he might be like one of my favorite living people. Like when I hear this guy interviewed, I'm just in awe of just how even keel and perfect he is and how he sees the world.
He's
I love this man. What? No.
He's a little bit of a weirdo.
He's a genius, and I love the way that he sees the world. And he's so understated with everything. Like, it seems like nothing really phases him, but he's really interested in everything at the same time. He's perfect. Love PTA.
Here's something to think about. This isn't even one of Paul Thomas Anderson's two best movies.
No,
I would say Boogie Nights and then
This
There
is the one
Blood.
That I saw in the theater. I was very excited to see it, and it was...
And I love this movie. Punch Drunk Love might be better than this.
For 15 minutes, I'd be saying this is maybe the greatest movie I've ever seen. For sure, the greatest movie I've seen all year. And then 10 minutes later, I'm like, when the fuck is this going to end? Like, I hate this movie. And it was like that throughout the entire movie, Brian.
Yeah, you see Tom Cruise doing the infomercial. You see William H. Macy, a sort of hapless ex-celebrity. Melora Walters taking a guy home from the bar and doing drugs with him. Every character's vignette is perfect to who they are.
And you know, you can say the same thing about Boogie Nights. The open of Boogie Nights. He introduces everyone in the opening scene. And it's a glorious scene. I think it made top
I don't think
five.
They did. Not in the opening scene. I think the opening is you see Mark Wahlberg at home. But then eventually you do get a montage of all the characters together.
I thought the opening scene was the marquee. And it shows it says Boogie Nights on the marquee. And it's that one long take. And then it goes down. It's a crane shot off of like a truck. And then it turns into a handheld at one point and goes inside the disco.
That's later. Because remember they first meet Mark Wahlberg. He's a busboy. Right, and they look at his penis in the back of the restaurant. Perhaps. But I'm telling you, that's a great scene. But Magnolia, in terms of introducing all the characters, the whole movie I love. I think it's great. Check it out if you haven't seen it. Magnolia 1989. Number three, Anderson.
Sorry, I'm researching Boogie Nights Open. Come on now. All right, number three for me. I got a clip for this one, Bri.
Clip time.
You know what? I'm gonna talk about it. I'm not going to let the clip do the work because it might be a little...
You're going to set it up.
I don't want to say it's obscure, but you might not know what you're listening to until... And it's
I always know.
I hear in my... This is one of those things that I hear in my head probably once a month. I just think of it. Like somebody will say something and it sounds like the same cadence. There is so much buildup in David Fincher's Seven.
Mm.
I'm going back to Seven, Brian.
It's a good one.
It's worth it.
It's a good one.
You know,
this could have been in top five unnamed characters.
John Doe, who was named John Doe.
I don't think, that's a nickname given to him.
There is so much, what's the word, mystery and intrigue.
Terror.
And
anticipation.
Anticipation built around this character. I don't remember.
Like, who is this fucking madman?
Where they're on his heels and they're seeing his wake throughout the movie.
Yep.
And you don't see him until about 45 minutes in. But like they're in his apartment. Like... I believe this is after.
It could be an hour.
He's already shot at them.
Yep.
I mean, they're right there, but they don't see him. And you're just going, who the fuck is this guy? This guy is so sick and so smart.
Yeah, and he's
and
so ahead
crazy.
Of him every step.
What does he look like? It's like a really good book. Like there's a book called The Alienist, which I've cited a couple times. I love that book. And like you don't know who this guy is. He's killing little 10-year-old boys in New York at the turn of the century and cutting off their asses and putting pennies on their eyes and eating their ass. And it's... this crazy character and your mind's doing all these flips trying to figure out like shape this person, and that's how it happens with John Doe in Seven. And here's where they finally get to meet him when he comes to the police precinct to turn himself in with his finger tips cut off, and it sounds a little something like this.
Detective.
They're walking away.
After this, I'm
Detective.
Gone.
They're ignoring him.
No big surprise.
Detective!
You're looking for me.
Hey! Ah! Don't you fucking move. On the fucking floor. Get away from him!
Cover him,
blood. On the fucking floor!
Cover him, blood.
I know you.
Now! Get out! Get down! On your stomach!
The fact that he's so...
Now!
Unassuming.
All the way! All the way, fucker! Now! Faster! Faster! Faster, fucker! Now! Dude's on the ground! Jesus Christ. What the fuck is this?
I'd like to speak to my lawyer.
There he is.
His heart's
God
probably,
damn it.
His heart's probably at about 52 beats per minute.
The fact that he's so normal and unassuming is even more terrifying.
But he's not that normal.
If he'd been a madman, it would have been less terrifying.
Because he had blood all over his chest, and he had cut off his fingers. He wanted to be John Doe. He wanted to be every man. I mean, to the point of
removing
absurdity.
His fingertips, removing his fingerprints.
Yes, and then the other like nameless detective or cops in the station are trying to handcuff him, but he's covered in blood, and they're like, "What the hell?" It was just all so grotesquely mysterious. I loved it. Still get chills. Thinking
good, good choice.
Yeah.
Good choice.
You know, with that, I'm a bike rider.
Good for you, buddy.
Detective!
Number three for me. Number three is my funny choice.
I can't wait.
The choice isn't funny, but the actual... I mean, it's not supposed to be funny to you. You know what I'm saying?
I'll be the judge.
It's from a comedy. This doesn't happen at the beginning of the film. This is a minor character. Well, a supporting character introduced halfway through, or at least a third of the way through. In Little Shop of Horrors,
he's being a noise.
Ellen Green, yes. In Little Shop of Horrors,
you gotta realize this movie's not good. You gotta stop going back to this goddamn well. Because this well has no water, bro.
What well am I going back to?
It's the well filled with sand.
Okay.
Unfunny
I've
sand.
I've been naming this to very many top five lists.
Oh, you talk about this movie with love all the time.
Oh, it's an enjoyable film. This
Logan,
part
you
of
seen
it's,
this?
Yeah, I think it's a delightful film.
Yeah, it's a delightful movie.
What?
What's wrong with you, Anderson?
Why? He's laughing now and winking.
No, I'm genuine. I'm serious, though. I like the movie.
Really?
All right. In A Little Shop of Horrors from 1986, directed by Frank Oz. You know Ellen Green from the very beginning. She's the woman. She's a sort of ditzy blonde. And this is set in the, I don't know, early 60s, late 50s. And she is, she appears several throughout the film with a series of bruises on her arm and face. And her boyfriend clearly beats her up. It's alluded to several times. And at a certain point, they're like, you know, it keeps coming back. This guy's no good for you. You shouldn't be with him. I know, but I love him. It's a very sort of silly thing. When you finally meet the boyfriend, it's Steve Martin as a sort of a leader of the pack biker type person, and he is revealed in a song he sings about how he loves to torture people and beat up little cats and do all sorts of horrible things. And you're like, what the fuck wrong with this guy? He's wearing leather, he's riding a motorcycle, and you're like, what is this? Who is this guy? Why is he so horrible? Reveal, the hilarious reveal is he's a dentist. Of course he loves masochistic, sadistic things. He is a dentist. He loves torturing people, causing people pain and misery, and it goes through like how that's his thing, that's what he loves to do. Steve Martin's reveal as the dentist, the abusive boyfriend dentist, a third of the way through Little Shop of Horrors is a master stroke. And this is one of the things you were talking about. It's a master stroke. It's one of the things you were talking about, Anderson, where you reveal the characters as big as, excuse me, the actors as big as the character. Yeah. That was me swallowing. The actors as big as the character, so they had to take a second to be like, oh, this guy we've been alluding to, it's Steve fucking Martin. It's like a big, big star. 1986, Steve Martin was a huge star.
He's been introed that way in so many different little bits on TV and this and that. It's like, who's it going to be? Oh, look, it's that wacky zany guy, Steve Martin. You know, he played a dentist in another movie.
What?
Novocaine was the name of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't look up the Little Shop of Horrors intro. Look up Steve Martin.
I'd rather not. I've seen enough Steve Martin in my life.
Have you seen this movie?
I don't. Yes, Brad. I'm sorry. Steve Martin is another. He's kind of in that Mel Brooks camp where I just don't get it. It's not like it doesn't. Like I'm missing like that part of my ears that makes that sound funny. You know what I mean? Like I'm deaf to that.
No, it's funny.
When I see Steve Martin overacting, I get cringes, and they're bad cringes.
No, it's funny.
I want to look away, and I do.
He's a dentist.
Not like a car crash. Novocaine. Check out Novocaine.
Okay.
He wasn't actually distractingly bad.
Did he sing in that?
He may. I don't remember. What's going on here? We don't have right. Oh, okay.
Wow, Logan's pumping us off to break.
I appreciate that because we're talking about Steve Martin, and I'm not trying to upset people. I know a lot of people have a fond place for them in their heart for him. But yeah, I grew up with King Tut, Dun Dun Nut. Still have horrible memories of my parents making me dance to that as a child.
I swear to God. I'd love to see the home videos.
They'd throw on the hi-fi and they'd be like, all right, here's that song. And then they lecture me on how wrong it is when these punk rockers destroy their instruments. And how there's children that would like to use those instruments, and it's a big waste. Let's listen to some good old-fashioned Steve Martin. Shocking that I hate him.
Good old-fashioned would have been Gary Kurt at the time.
Oh, God, Steve Martin. Doesn't he just overdo it over the top? Settle down, buddy.
But that was his whole shtick, man.
I don't like the over-the-topness of it all. Right. Fake crying all the time.
Coming up next, the end, the conclusion of the introductions.
Got a couple good ones.
Yes, it is almost time. It is almost time for us to do another Sniff Tracks. It's been a while. Sniff Tracks number 3 has been on the docket for quite some time. And we're always batting around ideas. We'd like to hear from you guys. If you want to let us know a movie that you think might be a great idea for us, it doesn't have to be a bad movie per se, but a fun movie, a silly movie, a serious movie maybe. But Twitter it to us. Tweet it to us? Tweet it to us.
What is
put it on our Facebook. Put it in our comments section at AndersonandBrian.com. Whatever you like. Just send us your ideas. Please make it be streamable on Netflix so everyone can enjoy.
Whatever lends itself to this here program on our banter back and forth, or but now banter at times. Banter. And you know, a few beers, some banter, and a little movie running underneath that you guys can watch.
Oh, if you don't know what the Sniff Tracks is, every once in a while, if you're a new listener, we will release audio commentary just to sync up with a movie of your choice.
For the record, I don't like the title Sniff Tracks. I'd like to call it the Film Vault commentary.
Okay.
Film Vault commentary.
Be that as it may.
Mm-hmm.
Send us your ideas, and now back to the show. Yeah.
Is that Darlene Love right there?
That's her. Thank you. Who that is? That's what's her face? Is that Tisha Campbell?
I don't know. It's Darlene Love from 20 Fear from Stardom. We're watching intros. We're watching the beginning of Little Shop of Horrors for some ungodly reason. And they have
a triplet of background singers.
That's right.
That are being featured, and it reminded Brian.
They're like the Greek chorus of the film.
20 feet from stardom.
We're also listening to Annie Corbett from Portland, Oregon. Leaving Gardens is the album, and check her up, anniecorbett.bandcamp.com.
Real quick, got angry too in 20 Feet from Stardom, going way back to the beginning of the episode with that documentary that Brian assigned me. Good movie, solid movie, probably be up for best documentary. It did feel like a guilt film throughout in many, many places. And when Bette Midler was inducting the one, who was it that got in?
Darlene Love.
You just made a sound.
Oh, come on.
We'll mark that down. You know, when Darlene Love... You guys out there in the listening audience, you ever heard of Darlene Love? What's that?
Well, no? Darlene Love was a sort
ever,
of a...
Ever heard of Darlene Love?
A known figure in rock and roll.
Bette Midler, and this is in the trailer, too, that I've suffered through like at least 9 times now. Bette Midler says, and I'm very proud to announce, and it's about darn time, Darlene Love. She's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. Mm. Hall of Fame. She's not famous. We don't know her fucking names. What do you mean it's about time? Like, we've been holding out, not letting this woman who is so famous, of course she should be in there. It's the Hall of Fame. Hmm? Darlene, was it Darlene Love?
Darlene Love.
I already forgot her name.
Wow.
She was talented, yes, but she wasn't, she even made some albums that didn't sell. No one cared, right?
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah. Is Phil Spector in the Hall of Fame?
I'm sure he's in the introductory class.
I feel like he should be. Let me ask you this. You ever heard of Pete Rose?
I have heard of Pete Rose. I have heard of Pete Rose.
Is he in the Hall of Fame?
Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame.
Darlene Love
is! Wait, are you talking about the Rock and Roll Hall of
Darlene
Fame?
Darlene Love is in a Hall of Fame, and Pete Rose isn't. Ridiculous. And Bette Midler is annoyed by that.
Are
it's
you,
about darn
are you
time.
In any Hall of Fame? Are you in your high school Hall of Fame?
No, but my name is on a board in a junior high for a turkey trot. And for the longest time, it was unofficial. I don't know if it was actually marked anywhere, but we had a point system in that same junior high, Brian, where you got demerit points for doing bad things, and I had the least amount.
Least?
Yeah. You're supposed to have like 200 was the most you could have, and I had negative 272, and I graduated. Very proud of that. They used to post them, and I always made sure that I was at the bottom because that's the kind of jackass.
Did you get so many you like rolled over past 200 back to zero?
No, you just can get minus after a while. And the dumb fucks would post it where everyone could see. And we all wanted to have the lowest. We were like in a competition.
Goody two-shoes, Andy.
What? No, we wanted to have the lowest.
Goody two-shoes.
How's a goody two-shoes? The most is good.
Oh, well, they take them away from demerits.
You. The demerits, yeah. You start off with 200, and then you lose them, and you can gain them back by going to like a chess club or staying after class. So, and they really thought that back in the day, like they thought that we'd be motivated to have a lot of
a
points.
Perverted competition.
Of course, yes. Negative 272, I blew everybody else away. Yeah.
Good for you.
Because I was smart, and I turned my dad against the vice principal. Smart. Genius. I'm like, yeah. Dad, he says bad things about you, and he says that he can't believe that you raised someone like me. I'll show him. So then my dad hates him. Every time I get in trouble, it's the vice principal's fault.
Wow.
Yeah. That all changed with my football coach later.
You put the record out of reach like Wayne Gretzky.
Oh, it was
scoring
completely
record.
Out of reach. I think the guy above me, my buddy Greg, had like negative 190 or something.
You were
like,
the Wayne Gretzky of
negative points.
Of negative points.
Yeah.
The greatest. The undisputed greatest player of all time.
13-year-old. Badass. Negative 272. I should have had a jersey made for me.
Number 272.
And he's like, you know, you can't go to graduation. I'm like, it's graduation from junior high. Who cares?
Yeah.
I don't want to go to graduation. It's embarrassing to walk that.
It'd be nice to get away from that.
All right, anyway, I don't know where that came from, sorry.
Number two for you. Character introductions.
Ooh, this is a good one.
Ooh, let's hear it.
All right, this not available. None of these movies are available on Fuckflix, unfortunately.
Streaming these.
Some really good ones, yeah. But the open of this movie, which is the intro of Going Back to the Well, and this is one of my favorites of all time, and I bring it up often. It has not been banned, though, Brian.
Semi-recent?
Has not been banned. 1971, Brian.
Okay.
This is a movie I stand by. I love this movie. Harold and Maude.
Oh, apropos to our... artwork this
so
week.
So I've heard.
Let me just say, while we're on the topic, a listener named Fanny, F-A-N-I, sent in some artwork. Check it out, apropos to Harold and Maude.
Harold and Maude, one of my all-time favorites. This movie is just so sweet and so well done, and if you like Cat Stevens at all, I'm a giant fan of that man's work, despite Dr. Drew telling me that he's awful. Fuck you, Drew.
Does Drew know?
Drew hates Cat Stevens. Like, he just doesn't like the 70s. That's Drew's problem.
Okay.
But
that's what I meant. Did you know, like, personally?
This
like,
movie is rife with Cat Stevens all throughout.
Yes, he did the soundtrack.
And the opening title sequence is Harold. You see mostly neck down. Starts off with his shoes coming down a flight of stairs. And then he's doing some kind of ritual. And you're not exactly sure what it is. or who this is or what's going on or what Harold's all about.
But there's some lovely Cat Stevens music playing.
Lovely Cat Stevens music playing. And till the very last note is where Harold finishes his act. And I know it might sound like it's sexual. It's not a sexual act that he's finishing. It is a disturbing act, though.
I think you can talk about it.
He made a noise.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And the Christ part almost sounded like the noise. When you put the Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Stop, Brian.
That
come
was
on.
Intentional. That
not,
was intentional.
Yeah, I'm putting it down. So I'm not going to say it. If you don't know anything about Harold and Maude, go in. Do watch this movie. It's one of the all-time greats. I love this movie. What okay. do you think of this movie?
I like you assigned it to me recently. I'm just thinking of the appropriateness. Yes, you did, and I liked it. I'm trying to think of the appropriateness of saying what he does in this opening scene.
Because it's so sweet. It's so poetic what he's into, what his hobby is.
But pick it up now, because any description you read of this movie will say a teenager obsessed with death, .. meets a woman who's got a joy for life or something.
Right.
So any description available on Netflix, if you were to get it, it'll tell you right there.
It's almost a perfect story as far as these two characters and where they go and how they meet and all the whole thing. The symmetry between them. Mm. Oh, it's beautiful. Love that movie.
I agree. It's very
Harold and Maude.
We talked about, too, you know what we don't like about this movie? Which, not about the movie, but the cover, the DVD cover or whatever.
Yeah,
it
doesn't do it justice at all.
It's like, you look at it and you're like, why is this child with this dour-looking woman?
Yeah.
It doesn't reveal anything about the movie.
Ruth Gordon isn't portrayed as you can't really bring the life that Ruth Gordon brings to this role in a still shot. There's so many different ways it could have gone with the title, with the cover. You're absolutely right. It looks like homework. If I have not seen this and someone who was telling me to watch this movie, I would look at that cover and just be like, what else can I watch instead of this? It just seems like right now I got like 7 movies in my house that are, like, people have sent me or I've gotten, and it's all homework.
Mm.
And this would be like at the bottom of the list if I had never seen it because of the cover. But don't go off the cover. It's a great movie. It's sweet. There's this fuck that I work with named Rune.
Oh, fuck that guy.
On Loveline. He's actually a sweet kid, but he's an idiot because just tonight I said, hey, Rune, you seen Harold and Maude? Yeah, actually, I rated it. On Rotten Tomatoes. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, what'd you rate it? Let me look. I gave it a 4 out of 10.
4 out of 5.
4 out of 10.
Oh, IMDb, you mean?
I 4 out of 10.
On IMDb?
No, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, Rotten Tomatoes. I'm sorry, buddy. I said Netflix.
I hate him a lot.
4 out of 10 is roughly low. It's really a good movie.
Him. Yeah, I know.
All right.
Yeah. I hate that man. Okay.
There were 2 for me.
Wait, hold on. Mm-hmm. Logs is not seen
I haven't
it.
Seen it. I just put it at the top of my queue, though, so by next week, maybe.
Good man. Don't look at that cover.
Don't look at the cover. Whatever you do. All right, number 2 for me. I'm glad, Anderson, you haven't named this, because I know, number 1, it's a movie you love. Number 2, it's a scene you love. And number 3, I don't know if we retired it or not, but you definitely have talked about it in the past, so let's see if it is something you agree with. The opening scene where you meet the Joker from The Dark Knight.
Yeah, it's
solid. So good.
Solid.
So good.
Very
the bank
solid.
Robbing scene from 2008, directed, of course, by Christopher Nolan. Such a well-paced and choreographed scene. The just to use the word I used again for Magnolia, it's kinetic. The action never stops. It's got a forward motion. Once the ball starts rolling downhill, it just keeps going. Perfectly sets the table for the Joker's character. He's ruthless. He's precise. He's exacting. He's patient. He's elaborate. And he's unconcerned for his own safety. The way he sort of mocks the mob-connected banker character. He's like, I don't give a shit. He's like, do you know who you're stealing from? He's like, no, I don't give
a
shit.
And the reveal when we figure out which one is the Joker, it's damn near close to perfect filmmaking. That entire opening sequence, as well as a number of other sequences in that movie, have ruined other movies for me. It's just, I will be sitting here today probably talking about Pacific Rim, and now it's a pretty fun movie. Go check it out.
You're 100% right about, you're 100% right, Anderson, about ruining other movies and other opening scenes, such to the fact that when The Dark Knight Rises, which was a good opening scene, a good reveal, a good thing with Bane, but it wasn't as good as this, and it suffered
good.
In comparison.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you set the bar so high with this movie, how do
it's
you possibly
like
make another one?
It's like when you finally meet that right girl, or a guy, if you're a girl, or if you're gay, and you meet that right, when you find the right one, and you're under the sheets, and everything's just clicking, and it's perfect. You know nothing else is going to compare, so what do? You put a ring on it.
That's right.
If I can marry Dark Knight,
if you like it, you should have put a ring on it.
Do not quote Beyonce.
Oh, sorry.
But what I'm saying is, we can't marry movies, we have to continue to play the field.
Who's Beyonce?
But I did get a chance to bang that Dark Knight 5 times in the IMAX theater. Holy shit. And
good
it wasn't
job,
none, of this, IMAX 3D shit. I'm so sick of it. You got to go see you know why you didn't like Pacific Rim? You got to go see it in IMAX 3D. You got to go see it in IMAX 3D.
Do you know that it was really dim?
No, because I saw it in 2D.
I saw it in 2D, too. It was really dim.
Was it? I didn't notice that. Well, the whole movie's kind of dark. It takes place at night. Right. But, yeah, that's another thing. Every single scene at night. Come on.
Raining. And in water.
Does
raining.
The sun ever come
water,
out?
Water.
Water, raining, ocean. And really, is the ocean that shallow that you can stand up in it?
Well, they're giant robots.
Mm-hmm. They are giant.
But I made the joke earlier, and it causes no tsunamis.
Yeah, I heard that joke. I don't know if a tsunami would be caused.
I don't know if it's a joke.
I don't know if it's a joke either. I don't know if you understand the plate tectonics, how they work, and you have to like have an entire shelf drop down a few inches for the tsunami to
set up a punchline.
So you're saying 250,000 pound robots stomping around in the middle of the ocean, wouldn't cause giant tsunamis?
It would cause some waves, but I don't know about a giant tsunami. I don't know if like the people over in
an
Japan...
An asteroid falling into the ocean would cause a world-shattering tsunami.
You may have a case. Maybe we'll get a seismologist in here.
No, going at the speed of sound.
Once again, though, we're arguing the science of Pacific Rim, which is pointless.
Oh, yeah. So when, and I've made this point numerous times, but please hear me out. This is the last time I'll talk about it for at least a couple weeks. When you put on the glasses, the 3D glasses, and you watch the goddamn IMAX, it squishes everything down. You could be watching a IMAX screen. You could be watching one half the size. It's going to look the same through your goddamn glasses. It's what it's doing is the gimmick. It's getting more money out of you, and it's wasting that fucking IMAX screen when it could be used for much more proper purposes. It's really upsetting. Whenever I see IMAX 3D, it's just like, oh, they're wasting that, and everyone's $2 is completely wasted.
True.
Fuck.
Number one for you.
So the sooner we all know this, the sooner we'll put a stop to that.
I don't know the last time I saw a 3D movie. Probably was Avatar. Actually,
was it in IMAX though? Makes a big difference.
Come on. Number one for you.
Really? Is that already number one?
Yeah.
I feel like I just talked a lot. All right.
We're both right.
1991, Brian. Wait, do you already think you're number one?
No, mine's coming up next.
Excuse me. Noise.
I just did it again.
God damn it, Brian. Really? Why am I not going last?
You know,
my mouth's glorious.
My mouth's dry. The mouse died, first of all, and I had some beef jerky a minute ago.
For the record, Joker, Dark Knight was on my ulcers. All right. In 1991, Brian, a man named Robert De Niro was still making fantastic movies, and he was still Robert De Niro.
Yep.
Right? He wasn't like this shell of a man and, you know, doing roles that make me wish he was just retired. He was in a movie called Cape Fear, where he played Max Caddy.
That was 91?
Yeah. And
quite a year for him.
Might be wrong. That might be wrong. It might be 95. No, I think it was 91.
No, it was 91.
Yeah, it was 91. Because I remember that's where I took the really good-looking, pretty cheerleader girl, Melissa Coikindal. I took her to watch it with
me. Sure, she appreciated that being mentioned.
I know. I took her to see it. It was like our first date ever, last date as well. Because it was like the fifth time I'd seen the movie, and I was actually saying his. You remember at the end when he's speaking in tongues? I was so into this
on
movie.
On the boat?
You know, and he's going down in the water, and he was in the water, and he's speaking in tongues. I actually had some of like his tongues like memorized, and I was saying them as he was saying them, and she was so creeped out and horrified, rightfully so. Anyways, the opening where we first see Max Caddy with all his tats, and he's doing that the push-ups in the prison cell.
Yep.
Fantastic intro.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
However, it's not my number.
Really?
Because many years before that, 1973, Brian, same actor, Robert De Niro, played a little character named Johnny Boy in Mean Streets.
Yeah.
Holy shit. That's such a great open. It's so well done, understated, one shot, one take of Johnny Boy. And it's his 12th film at this point. It's not the first time we ever see De Niro, but it's the first big film he's in.
Right.
Scorsese introducing De Niro to all of us in a character that we will be familiar with, which is a punk, a evildoer in New York.
Doesn't
whether it's gangster or whatever. He comes around the corner. He puts very unassuming. It's a long shot and a long take, and it's a shot from like across the street from down the street, and he very 70s, 1973, and Johnny Boy he's mailing some letters. He puts something in the mailbox. Then he walks away. And then you notice he looks over his shoulder a little bit nervous. And then takes a couple quick steps like he's trying to get away from that mailbox. There's people just walking by. They could be extras for all I know. Or they could be actual people on the streets because that's the way they used to do it back then, especially in New York. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Scorsese didn't let anyone know in that vicinity that fucking mailbox, federal fence by the way, was about to blow sky high.
That's great.
And then it freeze frames. And I think it freeze frames. And it just says in text at the bottom of the screen, Johnny Boy. And that's our first look at Johnny Boy, who is one of the biggest fuck-up characters, by the way, you'll ever see in any movie. Mean Streets, just for educational purposes, and just to see where Scorsese kind of got his beginnings for all the characters and movies that he created after that we love so much. It's not an I'm not going to lie to you and say it goes down easy. Mm. Mean Streets is a little tough, but there's some great characters, really great actors, and many of which we recognize today.
Much like you went through the AFI list to see a whole bunch of movies, 100 movies or whatever it was, when I was in high school, I had a list of movies I had to see. I convinced myself, and this was on them, on the list, and I should see it again because my only recollection is, yes, it was very rough. There was a fight in a pool hall, and Harvey Keitel's in it. And then, of course, this scene is very memorable.
It's mind-numbing how stupid Johnny Boy is, De Niro's character. It's much. You know what? He was in a movie before the year before this called Bang the Drum Slowly. I can't believe that Bang the Drum Slowly came out before this, where he plays a pitcher. He's for the Yankees.
Who has like cancer or something, right?
Really good movie. I love that Bang the Drum Slowly. I was hoping, I was just researching tonight, hoping it was on Netflix, Fuckflix Instant. It's not, unfortunately. But that's a movie worth checking out. Bang the Drum Slowly. Heartfelt, touching, good movie.
He has cancer.
The year before,
like
Brian,
right?
Settle down.
Doesn't he?
Settle down. Let people watch the movie.
Well, is this okay? Sorry, I thought it was the plot of the movie.
But that's the year before Mean Streets. Funny fuck ups in Mean Streets too. Like there's this one scene where they get in the car and it's daylight, and then it switches to an interior when he shuts the door. Like it cuts on the door shutting, and they're on the interior of the car. Nighttime outside. Like fuck ups like that, but a really dark movie, kind of hard to see, make out what's going on, but I think it's, if you're a Scorsese fan at all, it's really worth your while to see this if you have not, or see it again like you, Brad.
Johnny I might Boy. Have to
Johnny Boy
number one for me. This might be the oldest movie I've ever talked about in the Film Vault.
I doubt it.
1933 I've ever talked about. You've talked about some old stuff from 1933. It's iconic. It's been parodied many times, paid homage to many times, even remade several times. But it is iconic for a reason. The scene from King Kong, where King Kong comes out of the jungle, it's so elaborate, especially for a production from 1933. The set is humongous, and you don't know what – it's actually a really good bit of storytelling. They're on this island, the film crew, the explorers, whatever – they're
Jack
on this.
Black,
they're on
right.
Jack Black is on the island with Adrian Brody. No, this is 1933, the version black and white. They're on this island. You don't know what's going on.
The Big Lebowski dude is there.
Hmm.
The dude, Jeff Bridges.
No. Okay. No, it's not that one either.
Oh,
it's much older, in fact. Yes, you don't know what's going on this island. All you know is the natives are restless. They're weird. They're very. You know, they're acting very. Very skittish. They take Fay Wray, the blonde beauty, and they take her as a sacrifice to Kong, and they start chanting Kong, Kong, Kong. Kong. They're banging a gong, so to speak, no pun intended, because it's an actual gong. There's fire. There's natives. They're in like ritual.
Were the natives
guard.
That dumb to think that that animal?
No, because it worked.
That they'd actually be able to, you know.
Yes.
Have sex? Did they really think that it would work?
All I know is that it appeased Kong. But in any case, they've got her tied up. She's doing this great movie scream. One of the all-time great – we could do that, by the way. Top 5 movie screams. One of the all-time great movie screams. And when Kong finally appears, it's a holy shit moment because, first of all, the effects are a bit dated, obviously. It's stop-motion animation. But it's like, oh, my God, it's much worse than I thought.
It's creepier.
Giant gorilla.
That's stop – maybe I'm old, but that stop-motion animation still freaks me the fuck out. Much more than any CGI stuff. God, I sound old. I get it. I know I do. But like Ed 209 and King Kong and like that, even the early Tim Burton stuff, it's creepy shit.
Yeah, the stop-motion makes me want to more effective.
Like,
it's
I
so creepy.
You know, it's like right there. Like you can see the shadows on it. And you know, you want me to blow your mind, Brad?
I'm all for it.
You and I could wrap this program up here right now, in the next 5 minutes or so.
Go watch King Kong.
And I could take you by the hand, and I could walk you probably about 3 minute walk, brisk walk, and we'd be standing right where that entire thing was
really?
Shot. It was shot. It's now like just a strip mall of offices. Not a strip mall. It's just it's offices. Really
sure.
Boring. But there is a little sign that says King Kong.
Really?
Gone.
Where is that?
King Kong Gone, and it's where that entire set was built, and it's right. I just told you. Like,
I know, but three minutes in any direction.
It's right down here. It's like right there.
Wow!
I give the cross streets, but it's right there.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and it's just a very unassuming. It's also where Tara from Gone with the Wind was burned. They ended up burning down the entire set.
Wow.
I think a couple years later. Yeah.
That's crazy.
But they built the big giant doors there. Everything was right there.
The King Kong thing, I don't know if the whole movie holds up. I have a sense that it doesn't. But this scene, it's iconic for a reason. It's memorable and it's effective.
This is the 1983 version. Is the first movie I've ever remember seeing.
Mm.
Which can't be right.
There was a King Kong in like 79, and then there was Kong Lives.
76. The 76 one is the first one.
There was King Kong Lives, too, which was like 1980 or something.
The Jeff Bridges, Charles Grodin, Jessica Lange one is the first movie I ever remember seeing. And I was very young. I must have been 3.
Mm.
And I remember having a dry erase board at the house, and I wrote the name down, and I was going to keep track of all the movies I saw. I was very excited.
Yeah?
I still do that.
I would love to see if you still have that dry erase board.
No, that's long gone. But I started writing down the names again like 5 years ago. But,
what is this the one where he eats the people's heads and then pulls out the skulls, or is that Kong Lives?
I don't think so. I think that sounds like Kong Lives.
Yeah, Kong Lives like 2 years later.
Well, I'm excited to hear what the listeners have to say here.
Yeah,
because like I said, there was no good definitive list out there, and I think that did we do our also rans or did we hear the list?
Oh, we need
first?
To recap our list too. People have been asking for that because they lose track sometimes. Lose track. Dr. No has been number 5. Mm-hmm. Magnolia number 4. Little Shop of Horrors introducing the dentist, the Joker's introduction from The Dark Knight, and of course Kong, King Kong for his intro.
And if you're just tuning in now, here's what you missed. My number 5 is 1992's French film Man Bites Dog. Then I went with Alien, and number 4, number 3 was John Doe's Detective 7, and a little Harold and Maude, the very opening scene, which is also Harold's intro. Gives you a little peek into his fucked up mind.
Mm.
And then number 1 was Johnny Boy from Mean Streets, 1973. Also-rans, do we do that? What do we do with the also-rans?
Let's hear the listener top 5 first.
All right, listener top 5. If you would like to participate, I pull them from facebook.com/thefilmvault or Twitter at thefilmvault. Number 5, Hugo Stiglitz in Inglourious Basterds.
That was really good. That was very, very good.
Oh, is he the Jew killer, or the Nazi killer, or whatever, the Bear Jew?
He was the one that they rescued from prison.
Oh, that is a great scene. Oh, shit.
Number 4, Indiana Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Very dramatic.
That would almost be my list.
Very dramatic.
Number 3, the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Never heard of it.
Number 2, once again from Inglourious Basterds, the Bear Jew.
There you go.
Wow, they like their Inglourious Basterds. You know, there's a lot of... It might be his best movie.
There was also a lot of mentions. There was also a lot of mentions just for Inglourious Basterds in general. Like every character in that, every major
character
in the movie
has a big reveal, a big intro.
All the major characters have pretty good intros.
Hitler.
And the number one character introduction, as voted on by our listeners, is Darth Vader in Star Wars: A New Hope.
That was huge.
Mm-hmm. Willy Wonka almost made my list from the.
Willy I saw Wonka. That on a lot of lists, yeah.
And you know who? I can't believe it didn't come up. Who has a career, or at least an early career, full of great introductions? Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop, 48 Hours, and Trading Places. Three great introduction scenes that take place in the span of, what, 4 years or something like that? Great introduction scenes. Who else? All of the ones in Reservoir Dogs, Bullet Tooth, Tony, and Snatch. In fact, I would say all the ones in Snatch are very good. It's done very well.
Speaking of Snatch, yeah, that was the number one, the very first one that I came to mind was, and it came Guy Ritchie. Interesting, funny story. There's a lot of stuff that went back and forth between Guy Ritchie and Brad Pitt on the set. Like Brad Pitt was freaking out; he couldn't figure out how to do the accent. And then they went back and forth, and Brad Pitt's like, "I don't want to come up with it. You have to come up with it." And Guy Ritchie's like, "Well, you just do something." And I guess like the night before they started shooting his principal scenes, he came up with a cross between, I'm talking about Brad Pitt now, came up with a cross between something, some kind of accent, and Fenster from Usual Suspects.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Considering that was his face in the movie.
That's how, but that, yeah, and that's how he came
Benicio.
Up. Benicio's, what he did with in Usual Suspects. But they were trying to figure out also on the set day of, how should we introduce Brad Pitt's character in this movie as Mickey O'Neill. And Brad Pitt, height of his sex appeal, don't look at me and yawn. That's like 5 different strokes for your little...
Sorry, buddy.
Noises. That's as offensive, but times 5.
Sorry.
So they're trying... Brad Pitt, sexiest man alive at this point, you know, height of his...
Sure.
Not that he's not now. But they both agreed and thought it would be hilarious. I think Brad Pitt came up with it, but he'd be taking care of business, going to the bathroom, squatting down behind a trailer. That's where you first see Brad Pitt's character, Mickey O'Neill.
Yeah.
He's got his pants
around
his ankle.
The whole Brad Pitt thing.
Yeah. Also, Buscemi's character in Con Air, was with the mask and the thing. Con Air. I love that movie. Yep. I do.
Guilty pleasure.
Nicky Cat in the Limey. It's still hilarious. Wow. when he's standing there. It's all jump cuts, but he's making all those off-the-page remarks about what he's seen at the park. Very, very funny to me. Sue Lyon's character in Lolita as Lolita. And Anton Chigurh in No Country.
Yeah.
That was a great open and intro for that character. That was a fun one. That was good.
Yeah, good list.
We talked about some fun stuff.
Was that from a listener, Logan? Where'd that come from?
Yeah, it was. It was from our listener, Tyler Musty.
Thanks, Tyler, for supplying us with a good list. We're all ears when it comes to good lists, so send them in.
We're all ears?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
And gambling, right?
Yep, let's gamble. Last week, you guys gambled on Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, the Rotten Tomato score was 76%. Anderson bid 83%, and Brian right above with 84%.
Yeah.
Currently, the Wednesday after release,
shit,
the Rotten Tomatoes score of Pacific Rim has dropped to 71%.
It's going to continue to drop, dude. It's going to be down to 66.
I have thought myself, my strategy is always to go 72% with these big movies. I've done it probably 8 times. And
when do they stop rating them, though? Like, have all the big critics already come in? Is it done?
I assume so.
Yeah, so it's going to be stuck at 71 forever, you think? Because it's not a 71 movie. It's a solid 65.
Yeah, it has 222 reviews at 71%.
Some stragglers need to get out there and rate it poorly so that I'm right.
222.
All right, so what do we do here?
You ought to sign me a movie.
Oh, by the way, Anderson won.
Oh, yeah, I'm a winner.
Good job.
I won that round.
Proud of you.
Yeah. What do I have you watch? I don't know, man. You know what? 20 Feet from Stardom wasn't terrible, so I'm not gonna hurt you here.
Thank you.
I'm not going to hurt you.
Why would I make you see a terrible movie?
What? Why don't we both see Blackfish?
Is it in theaters yet?
I think it gets released this Friday, yeah.
If it's out, Logan, look it up and see if it's out, and then I will see it.
No, you know what? No. Nah. Guy, go home and watch Headhunters.
Headhunters?
Yeah.
Right?
It's foreign, buddy. You're going to have to read some shit.
Fuck.
Yeah.
And it's streaming, so.
That's what I'm
helps you out.
I'm always nice as far as that
what
goes.
What a guy. What a guy.
I can't get any confirmation that Blackfish is going to be playing anywhere around here.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to gamble on this week.
This week, you're going to be gambling on Red 2.
Ooh. We're gambling on the Rotten Tomatoes score of Red 2.
You see this first one?
I did, and it was, I'll tell you after, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the first one?
No, but the trailers for the second one make me feel like I'm missing out on something, but I feel that way all the time, so. That says nothing.
What does that even mean?
Well, it means, like, every time I see a trailer for a sequel, and I haven't seen the first one. I mean, I felt that way even with Fast 6. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You want to go back and see the first
one? I don't want to, but
at least
like,
to have a basic knowledge.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here, and I raise my hand, and there's no one saying yes.
What do you predict?
Are you ready? You got yours?
Yeah.
72, buddy.
Wow.
72.
I say 60.
But I think that it knows what it is, and people should all be like,
I think the first one knew what it was. The first one I was going to say is...
This one looks like it's even more tongue-in-cheek than the first one.
The first one was a good enough movie, a sweet little movie, kind of a clever movie. This one feels like a little bit more of the same, just dipping back into the well.
72.
And I don't expect it to be great, but I could be wrong.
72.
Well, the first Red has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 72%.
Oh! Hey! Bodes well for me.
But now, currently, the Wednesday before release, Red 2 has a Rotten Tomato score of no Rotten Tomato score.
Yeah.
Oh.
Feeling good.
We're doing this a day early, so less reviews, obviously.
Wait, feeling bad.
That's not good if you have your score higher.
Because that means that they're not letting people watch this, which is always a
plus. Other movies worth mentioning that are coming out this weekend, though, Rest in Peace Division has no Rotten Tomato score as well.
RIPD, we didn't do
and that. Only God Forgives comes out this weekend.
Yeah.
Wide release.
Very excited.
Or, you know, wide for a limited movie.
Because it was playing down the street from my house a couple weeks ago, but it was playing only like at 9:30. I had to be at work, and I couldn't do it. God damn it. This movie is supposed to be very controversial. We'll see. It has an R rating. We're talking about Only God Forgives.
Split down the middle, too, with, I think, a 49%.
I saw 44 last I saw, but that's whining reffin'.
What's your take on RIPD?
That looks to me like Men in Black 4, a total ripoff and a movie that I will at all costs avoid.
Okay.
Banned. RIPD. Looks awful. I know you'll be seeing it there with hands in your pants because Ryan Reynolds is involved, right?
That is true. I mean, what? Thank you, Annie Corbett from Portland, Oregon, our feature artist. Leaving Gardens, the album, it's anniecorbett.bandcamp.com. Or if that's too much of a mouthful, just check out andersonandbrian.com to check out a little more Annie Corbett. and to comment on our episodes. Like Anderson said, put your ideas and lists and such in our comment section. If you're like, oh, is that film I talked about again? Go to the list of our films discussed over there at Honorable Mentions. He has information on feature artists. Sniff Tracks. We got to get on that.
Yeah, we do.
Sniff Tracks 3 coming out soon. And what else? Facebook, Twitter, The Film Vault on both.
Ooh, almost forgot. Brian, you know what your final count of...
No, I'm sure it was very high. I'm gonna guess a dozen. Baker's dozen.
Baker's dozen, 10. I can't remember what it was last week, but this week, for those of you keeping track at home, 10.
10.
10.
Just barely cracked double digits.
Guess what? Win over Mango!
Oil ponies gallop underground. Midday, midnight. And passed on.